Welcome to the Juliana Forlano Show. I'm Juliana Forlano. We have an awesome show for you. Two of my very favorite guests are returning. First up, David Bender. He's the Chief Strategy Officer and Political Director of the Progressive Voices Network, where you can find our show in addition to being on WBAI and Netroots Radio and For Your Information Nation Network and a bunch of other places. Bender has served as a senior advisor on Howard Dean's presidential campaign. He has had a long-running talk show called Politically Direct. One of my favorite guests, first up to talk about the GOP debate last night, and he's funny, which I love. Second half of the show, Dennis Campbell, the founder of and publisher of the UK Progressive magazine, is joining us to talk about the Bernie Sanders of the UK being elected to the Labour Party. So you got to stay tuned, right? We're going right into the show today. No jokes up front, because if you watched the GOP debate, you realize that the entire process of our political system has been turned into a joke by the Republican Party. I don't know. Did you watch it? I grew up in an Italian family. I talk about this all the time. And there is some old wives' tale that says, you know, avert your eyes to the horror. Not of, you know, what's happening in politics, but let's say if you go past a horrible car wreck where people are bloody in the street, you know, in order to save yourself from the stress of the trauma, if you can't get out and help people anyway, don't look at it, which is an old, old wives' tale. But that is how I felt about the GOP debate. It was worse than a horror movie. I had to cover mine eyes with mine hands and look through. We're also going to be taking your calls today at our normal number. So, you know, get your pen out, write this down, 718-951-4444. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about this as well, especially given that our first guest, David Bender. Now, we had him on to talk about the first GOP debate. The first GOP debate was also an enormous Trump show and train wreck. And David said that we should be careful because he believed that Carly Fiorina, who was at the kids' table in the original debate, would be bumped up to the adults' table in the second debate. And lo and behold, there she was. He said that he believes that we should keep an eye on her. She's a ringer or something. And he's joining us now to tell us what he thinks about this most recent debate. David, thanks for joining us on the program.
It is a pleasure to be here. And actually on the ground, when the debate was going on, I was literally above the country. I was on a cross-country flight for the debate. And they had to strap me in. I didn't drink, but I was strapped in, looking at 11 people in front of an airline. It was a bizarre, surreal experience. And I got to tell you, as you mentioned, Carly Fiorina was on fire, as people have as the takeaways. And you know the way this works, Juliana, is it's never what happens in the moment. It's in these days after. What are the clips? What are the sound bites out of almost 3 hours? And it is Carly, Carly, Carly. Mm. She plays well in the moment, and she plays well after the moment, which is a very important part of all of this.
Well, she couldn't name one woman who should be on the $10 bill, I assume, because all the great women in history did things that didn't subjugate others and would therefore not be appropriate to her Republican values. Who was she going to say? Mother Jones?
That was a very telling moment. Of course, if she had a sense of humor, and this is where I think if there's a vulnerability to Carly Fiorina, is that she, in some ways, she is perfectly the anti-Sarah Palin. Mm. The thing that people liked about Palin was there was a sense of warmth, not a sense of intelligence, but a sense of warmth and comfort.
Yeah,
you don't
folksiness.
Get that from Carly Fiorina. There is flintiness, a lot of heat, but no warmth at all. And if she had warmth, that moment would have been a broad smile and say, after 8 years, I hope it'll be me on the $10 bill.
Mm.
That it would have been the perfect opportunity for something self-deprecatory. She hasn't shown that part yet.
What do you...
And that's interesting.
What do you believe the reason for her rise from kids' table to adult table is?
Well, I've given this a good bit of thought, and it seems to me that this is the perfect moment, in the same way that Ben Carson has been rising, whether he will continue to rise now or whether all of the sort of anti-establishment support is now going to shift toward her is an open question. But you look at the landscape, and every election is in reaction to the previous one or, in effect, the one that we're in. So we look at 8 years of Barack Obama as president, people saying the GOP opposed him simply because he's black. Well, look who's doing well in Iowa. It's Ben Carson. It allows Republicans and independents to say, no, it was just the wrong black president. The same will be true for a Fiorina Clinton contest. All of a sudden, this whole breakthrough historic, the Democrats have nominated a woman who can be the first woman president, that's off the table.
Well, I think the Democrats
Democrats
should nominate the first Democratic Socialist president. The Republicans are not going to have one of those.
The Republicans are not. And, you know, Bernie was invoked actually at the kids' table by Bobby Jindal, who said that there was no difference between Barack Obama and Bernie Sanders, which would come as a surprise to both of them.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders had the largest tweet of the night, by the way. He said the tweet was that it's over. Not one word about economic inequality, climate change, Citizens United, or student debt. And that's why the Republicans are so out of touch. Do you think he's right on?
I think he is mistaken, and it's rare for Bernie to be mistaken. There was a word about climate change, and it came from Marco Rubio, who, as the millennial candidate, somehow managed to put himself on the wrong side of climate change, saying that it is a job killer to support efforts to restrict carbon. And that was very telling. He got pretty much consensus. No one disagreed with him. And this is a very key point. This is when you break things down, like marriage equality and climate change, these are generational issues. And the Republicans, as they are with immigration, are on the wrong side of all of those issues. It did come up, and it came up badly for Republicans.
Do you think that the United States voting population would fall for a sort of tokenism that you were talking about before? Well, the Democrats are running a woman, so because they've got a woman, that means that woman is going to be good for women's issues. Because they have a black guy, that means that person is going to be good on civil rights. Are we that stupid as a populace?
Well, are we that stupid is a hard question to answer when Donald Trump is at the top of power. It really is. I wish I could give you a better answer than I don't know. But I will say that Fiorina seems intent on saying there are no women's issues. That she will be a candidate for all Americans, that this whole idea of pandering to women, which Hillary does, and this would be, in her view, this would be such an interesting contrast, because, as you know, Hillary went on with Jimmy Fallon after the debate, and she talked about, she did her postmortem on the debate, she talked about things like reproductive rights, child care, all of the issues. There are, in fact, workplace equality in terms of wages. She made very stark differences between herself and Carly Fiorina, which I'd love to see in the general election, because I do think women will vote not just based on gender, but based on what is in their interests. And that could be, that really comes down to a Democratic philosophy versus a Republican one. So it'll be very telling to see the two of them going up against each other. I will say that one of the things we saw was it was both Fiorina and Chris Christie. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, he's got a bridge he hasn't burnt yet. he's still in this thing. The two of them were the toughest directly on Hillary Clinton. And I think that that's telling. When it comes down to the end of this, the Republicans are going to try and nominate someone they think can beat Hillary. And both of them went right after her, and I have to say, as an analyst, I think effectively. They were strong, they were tough, they were prosecuting, to use Christie's words, the case against Hillary Clinton.
We're speaking to David Bender, Chief Strategy Officer and Political Director of the Progressive Voices Network, a network that runs our show, the Giuliana Forlano Show. I'm, again, very happy to have you on. What do you make of all this, I mean, this Trump business? Is it, are we still in, oh, this is a joke, or has this turned into something far more serious?
It's not a joke, and it is serious in the way you and I attended a conference, a blood conference in Boulder, the Conference on World Affairs.
Yes.
And I did something in the tradition of Roger Ebert at that conference, which was to break down a film over five nights. And the film was a film made back in the 50s called A Face in the Crowd. And you were busy doing other panels. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie or got to see it, but it's a brilliant, brilliant movie, Giuliana, because it talks about, back in, we're talking the late 50s, what happens if a television demagogue suddenly becomes a political force. And Andy Griffith played that character. It's an Ilya Kazan movie. Absolutely brilliant.
Did you know that this was happening with the Donald Trump when you picked that movie? Just curiously?
I wasn't thinking of Donald Trump. Donald Trump was at that point, you know, the constant trial balloon that would never fly. what I was thinking about was that our politics are now very vulnerable to that kind of a demagogue, someone who can use the media, and truthfully, since Ronald Reagan, we've seen it, someone who is effective and skilled at using the camera instead of substance. And Donald Trump has just taken it to the nth degree. He is all about celebrity. He's all about self-promotion. He's unashamed about it.
I couldn't believe when he attacked the physical looks of Rand Paul, you know, and Fiorina.
Oh, yeah.
It's
Rand Paul, it, you know, responded appropriately. Isn't this what we did in junior high? And aren't we over that? But it doesn't seem to matter. None of that. People enjoy. Now, Fiorina called him what he is, called him an entertainer. And if people had been more effective in calling Ronald Reagan an actor, and mm-hmm. they couldn't do it by the time he was running for president because he'd been governor for two terms. But that should have been the thing that undid him. This is a man who pretends to be what he is not. And that's ultimately the way to take him down, is to compliment him on being such a great entertainer and dismiss him. She was the most effective at doing that, and I think it's something actually that others can take note of. We'll see how this plays out. Frankly, the public is enjoying the show. And the first votes aren't cast, I will remind you, until February 1st. This show has a long time to run in tryouts, as they say on Broadway.
Are we still working and living under the assumption that the reason Donald Trump is the forerunner is because there are so many other candidates, and once those candidates start to drop out, then we're going to see, you know, percentage rises around the remaining candidates?
You know, yes, but not when you're looking at the kind of money that's out there, and, you know, Jeb Bush, no matter how low in the polls he drops, still has 100 million plus in the bank, more than that, and certainly with the super PACs on his behalf. It looks like Marco Rubio is likely to win the Sheldon Adelson $100 million primary.
Really?
Did you know there was an Adelson primary?
He has introduced
legislation that would make online gambling more difficult. Guess who loves that legislation?
The guy who runs a lot of casinos.
Sheldon Adelson, who dropped $100 million in 2012.
Right.
Sheldon and Miriam Adelson.
Yes.
From my hand to God, you can't make this stuff up. So Marco Rubio can stay in for a long time. I'm betting Chris Christie can stay in a lot longer.
That's because he has all the taxpayer money and the pension funds from everybody in New Jersey that he's just stolen and can run on for a good long time.
You know, apparently that has legs too, and so does John Kasich. John Kasich, who didn't particularly stand out in this debate as much as he did in the first one, John Kasich's doing very well on the ground in New Hampshire. This is a long campaign, and I think we will not see this field winnow until January or February. So that means that the notion that getting it down to 2, 3, 4 candidates makes Trump more vulnerable, I don't think we're going to see that for a while. This show's going to stay on the road. I do want to say something that I thought was really telling, but I've seen nobody else. We're going to have this as an exclusive right here on the Juliana Furlano Show.
Excellent.
One of the arguments that the independent, I think it's been the super PAC on Jeb's behalf, has made against Trump is, do you want a president who is a germaphobe, who won't even shake hands in a crowd? Have you seen that spot?
No.
That's out there running.
Yeah.
They've tried to say this guy is so out of touch. He
literally won't touch you.
He will not shake hands with people.
He's so out of touch, he won't touch you.
Well, I don't know if you saw this moment during the debate. No one's commented on it. But at the very end of the debate, when they were asked to pick their Secret Service name, and Jeb very smartly came up, had time to think of it, and came up with Energizer, playing off the whole idea that he's low energy. Donald Trump extended his hand for Jeb to slap, as a fist slap, which Jeb did quite triumphantly. Pointing out, forgetting the fact that he had said Trump refused to touch people. All of a sudden, this is one of those fact checks that in real time you can check, turns out not to be true, because it was Trump who extended his hand. Smart move on Trump's part, who then called himself Humble as his Secret Service name. Another smart move.
Wow.
Played very well for the crowd.
Are we that stupid that questions like what would your Secret Service name be are included in debates now? This is not only what was happening on the stage, but the context to which we have devolved has upset my listeners so much. We're opening up the phone lines in a little while, and they call in, and they've been calling in over the course of the past few weeks since the first debate, since our first talk about that debate. And everyone is up in arms about what has become of this political process. Is there anyone who could say, I'm sorry, we're actually rather serious about what's happening here, so can we rein it back in? Is there any, or would that be up to the networks that are hosting the debates? I mean, how can we get this thing back in
bothered,
the box?
I wasn't as bothered by that moment after flying cross country and going through 4 hours of all of this. I have to tell you, I think there was a lot of substance. I think one of the things that was very interesting is that we heard Republicans talking about drug policy for the first time, and actually coherently. Certainly Rand Paul was coherent on it. Carly Fiorina, in a very effective personal way, talked about losing a child, burying a child to drug addiction, and talked about the importance of treatment. That didn't sound like a Republican debate I'd ever heard.
And what do you believe is responsible for that conversation? Obviously, they're all prepared for everything. So
you play it out. Everyone is looking at it, both personally and polling numbers. Sometimes this is personal. I think we know Rand Paul comes at this from a libertarian standpoint. We saw him go toe-to-toe with Chris Christie, who actually was caught in a contradiction, saying he favors federal intervention on state action on drug policy, and yet talking about how in New Jersey they have medical marijuana. And he couldn't answer that. He couldn't answer it when Rand Paul threw it back at him. So that was substantive to me. I don't think, you know, not to say that these people are right on these issues, but we actually saw contrasts on things that mattered. Things like Lindsey Graham insisting in the earlier debate, and it bled into the adults table, if you will, that we put boots on the ground in Syria. That was debated, and I'd love to have that debate. I wish that I had been, you're never going to hear me say this except right now, I had been Donald Trump. Ooh. when Jeb Bush did his applause line about my brother kept us safe.
Oh, my God. My God.
Wouldn't you have wanted to be Trump at that moment if he'd had the one missing brain cell that should have been present? Because usually he's really good at this. He could have turned him and said, well, yeah, was president when we were attacked, reading a book to kids.
Right.
He missed the moment.
Isn't that normally a Democratic talking point or a Democratic point that we bring up often when people say George W. Bush kept us safe? We say, oh, excuse me, he was president during 9/11. So,
that's right.
So do you think it's a matter of strategy that Donald Trump was not echoing what would be considered a Democratic talking point? Or do you think he just missed the mark because he forgot?
I think he missed because he was making a strong point of saying that he had opposed the Iraq War. And, this is in the Reagan Library. He was doing this and got some echoes back from Ben Carson saying that he had advised W against going in as well. I mean, this is not the Republican Party of John McCain and Mitt Romney who were forced to say that Iraq was a good idea. This is going to continue to be debated. The problem we've got as Democrats, is that at the end of the day, you've still got Hillary, who voted for that war.
Mm-hmm.
This is
that
where
is a
Bernie
problem.
Is so compellingly effective, as was Barack Obama.
If Trump wasn't in the, I mean, we're all struggling to give context to what is happening to our political system here. If Trump wasn't in this race, do you believe all the ire that's currently being directed toward him would be going toward Jeb Bush or Ben Carson or whoever the front runner is? Or are we looking at something totally Trump-centric?
This is Trump-centric. This is a phenomenon that happens once, you know, every 50 years in politics. It really is, in its way, very akin to Ronald Reagan, who defied the laws of political gravity, where you could say things that were not fact-based, but you were so avuncular in doing it, as Reagan was. Mm. Or in the case of Trump, you're so bellicose, but in a way that people like. They think that he's being honest. They don't care what he says. And that's dangerous, because it is this whole idea that our politics are so scripted that even if the script is making sense, people don't want to hear it anymore. They want to hear that which they believe is a true from the heart moment. And that's how bad the process is on all sides, is they need that.
The Democratic debate, the first one, is October 13th. What are we going to be looking for on that day?
Well, I think we saw a preview of it with Hillary Clinton's post-debate conversation with Jimmy Fallon.
Mm.
We saw the warm, she did a sketch where she actually pretended to be talking to Donald Trump, played by Jimmy Fallon, and she put him on hold for a second and grabbed a glass of wine. We saw the warm, kind, grandmotherly Hillary Clinton. And if we see that person, now, the problem again, Bernie has the same problem that Carly Fiorina has. They're both extremely effective, but they don't show a lot of personal warmth. And at the end of the day, that's what drives a lot of politics.
We had a lot of hope and change over the last one. And Obama's speeches, I've seen many of them. They are soaring. They make the hair on the back of your neck stand up if you're Italian or hairy. He is amazing at rhetoric and speeches. Did we not learn anything? Can we go back to like a politician who just says kind of what they mean regardless? You know, I feel like did we learn? I think we might have learned.
I hope so. I actually think that rhetoric used in the right way, and the president after Charleston, in that moment, showed that rhetoric can actually elevate a nation.
Yes,
and I was grateful to have him as president as I could be to have lived during Lincoln's time or FDR at the height of the Depression. Hearing Barack Obama then, I really appreciated him. Do we get that from Hillary Clinton? I don't know. There are a lot of reasons, and you know, this is a much longer conversation, which we will have someday, maybe over a drink. But the problem with our politics is that we expect from our president to be both a king or queen and prime minister, to reign and rule at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're two different skill sets.
Yes. So you have to be able to do policy, and you have to be able to do, move crowds, et cetera.
Exactly. And you can't do, they are linked, which is why if we were really rational, we'd toss the whole system out and bring in a parliamentary form of government, because they should not be linked. And have a ceremonial leader with no power and who can make everybody feel good.
I have to tell you, I cannot believe that we've been talking for almost a half an hour. I feel like it has flown by, and I do appreciate so much you coming on the show. We're speaking with David Bender, Chief Strategy Officer and Political Director from the Progressive Voices Network. David, final thoughts on what we should be looking out for? You were so prescient in your predictions around Carly Fiorina last time.
I'll tell you, keep your eye on Martin O'Malley in that debate. In the Democratic debate, because no one is paying any attention to him. And he's actually substantive. He's actually pretty good. This is assuming Joe Biden is not in at that point, and I don't think we know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton, Martin O'Malley is the guy who has the biggest opportunity to get a lot of attention.
All right. We shall see. Thank you so much for coming on, David, and we'll get you back on right after that, whenever the next debate is.
Can't wait. I'll get on an airplane.
Thank you so much. You're listening to the Giuliana Forlano Show. You can give us a call and chime in with your thoughts. We have a moment or two after the break before we get our next guest on the air. Our number is 718-951-4444.
Tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be all right? All right. All right. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we'd all love to see the plan. You ask me for a contribution. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. Don't you know it's gonna be all right? All right. institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
Don't you know it's gonna be? All right. Hope I didn't bust your radio with my singing. This is Giuliana Forlano. You're listening to the Giuliana Forlano Show. That was awesome. I loved having David Bender. We've got a bunch of calls stacked up, and I want to get to you. I'll try to get to all of you. I don't know if I can, but before our next guest calls us from the UK to talk about the Bernie Sanders of the UK that just won over there. Rose from New Jersey, you wanted to chime in.
Yeah, very interesting show, as always. We missed you so much. What I'd like to say is, and I talked to my brother in Florida, and the statistics on this whole business vary from state to state, but I would like to throw out something that most people are not aware of. Somehow in Congress it was decided, and four states had adopted, something called heat or eat. And this is a situation where you have 165,000 either disabled or retired people in New Jersey. If you receive heat with your in your rent, you're not entitled to but a pittance in food stamps.
Heat or eat. Oh, my
heat
God.
Heat or eat. Yes. This word has to go out across the airwaves to let people know how wonderful Mr. New Jersey is.
Chris Christie.
And we've never, ever heard about one of his greatest remarks was that we would take all the fracking liquid. Well, we'd like to know about these things. Mm. I'll make it short. Love you. See you soon.
Thank you so much, Rose. We'll get to you soon. You're listening to the Giuliana Forlano Show. Coming up on our show, Dennis Campbell, the founder and publisher of UK Progressive. Hold on. I'm going to try to get him on the Skype machine here. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty. So let me try. He called me, and then I'm calling him back. So let's see what we can do. But anyway, Dennis, are you with us? Dennis, are you with us? Can you hear me?
I see you. Do you
Hi,
see me?
Dennis. I can hear you. Hi. How are you? You're on the air. Can you hear me, Dennis? We're talking to, hopefully, if this works out, Dennis Campbell, founder and publisher of the UK Progressive magazine. He's the author of 7 books on politics, the Middle East, and customer excellence, and also the co-host of the 3 Muckrakers podcast with former BBC anchor Phil Perry and Dr. Dario Linares from the University of Brighton. He's a commentator for the BBC, for ITV, for Al Jazeera English, CNN International, PBS, Hong Kong TV, China Radio International, and the Giuliana Forlano Show. Let's just say we are up there with PBS and Hong Kong TV. He will soon make a giant leap from commentary to elected office when he runs, or stands, as the Brits call it, next May for a seat in the Welsh Assembly government. That's Wales' parliament. Simply growing up in Massachusetts, he had Ted Kennedy and Ed Brooke as examples of classic middle ground seekers. He wants to change these, what they have over there, and we have it here too, what he calls the poisonous dialogue in politics, and actually get some stuff done. He spent last Saturday with others in the Liberal Democratic Party, or the Lib Dems for the Wales, doing a refugees welcome rally and march in Cardiff. We're having a little bit of trouble getting him on the line here, and here he is. So let's try to get him. Dennis, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you. Hello.
Hello. You called at the perfect time. I just finished your introduction.
Wonderful.
So we're just going to Skype chat instead of video chat so we can make sure that these things keep us connected over the entire ocean. It's amazing we can do this at all.
It is amazing considering all I had to go through because I've just had my entire computer system die. So finally to get through on the iPad is perfect.
Wow. I'm thrilled. That's we've been wanting to have you back on the show for a long time. So when Jeremy Corbyn was elected to the UK as a Labour Party leader, I was like, get Dennis. We got to get Dennis. He's being hailed as the Bernie Sanders of the UK. What do you make of this?
He's quite an individual, I'll tell you. He was added to the ballot in the 11th hour, quite literally at the 11th hour, literally 1 hour before nominations closed, in an effort to have a spirit of fairness to the election. They added Jeremy as the fourth candidate to the slate of electors. All this happened because the Labour Party lost back in May. They lost the election very, very badly, and their leader resigned. So they went through this torturous process over the summer of trying to find somebody to replace him. And when this guy was added, everybody kind of raised an eyebrow, and the bookies picked him as a 500-to-1 long shot. Mm. And then a funny thing happened. He started going out and talking to people and reminding people in the Labour Party of their roots. And suddenly we had thousands upon thousands of people joining that party. And there's now they had 105,000 new members to the party. And he walked away with about 88% of that vote and completely shocked what are considered to be members of the New Labour movement, which was founded by Tony Blair and that whole crowd. So basically 9 out of 10 people in the Labour Party hate him, but he ran a great grassroots campaign and won.
Ha. Huh. So what does this mean for UK politics?
Well, that's the $64,000 question now, isn't it? We've been through our first week with him as leader, and it's been an
everything's fixed. It's all fixed.
It's been an astonishing week of events. I mean, we've had him, we've had a big furore over silly stuff. It was very much like your Republican Party debate, where he showed up and decided he wasn't, for whatever reason, going to sing the national anthem here, God Save the Queen, sung to the tune of Your America the Beautiful, so they have the same tune. And he just basically decided, no, I'm not going to sing. So that created a furore all throughout the media. They were all going, well, you know, he's not patriotic. And the other side of the argument, well, he's just exercising free speech, doing as he wishes. And it was just this incredible craziness. His driver knocked over a BBC cameraman, and then he walked into Prime Minister's Question Time, which is an event that happens at noon every Wednesday, and gave probably one of the best performances ever given by a Labour leader, even Tony Blair. He walked up to the dispatch box and he said, you know, I'm going to try and bring a different tone to these proceedings, and proceeded to talk about what his constituents were asking him, the questions and the emails that he was getting. And it was very, very effective. It knocked Cameron completely off of his pins, because these Prime Minister Question Times could be quite raucous and, you know, kind of a Punch and Judy show. But it was very interesting. Time will tell, though. I mean, he still has a lot of convincing to do within his own party. That's something we talked about on our podcast today. I have a podcast, yes, called The Three Muckrakers with a former BBC anchor and a professor down at Brighton University. And
absolutely.
We're all
talked about
very
it.
Concerned about how he's actually going to be able to win over the party in the longer term.
Why are they unhappy with him? Is he too far to the left? Is he not Labour enough? What's the discontent?
Well, I think if you were to look at Labour today, you would say that they're more like the corporate side of the American Democratic Party. Mm. So I would say they're the Hillary and Bill Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, even to some extent the Joe Biden, as opposed to the Elizabeth Warren. He's more on the Elizabeth Warren side. So if 90% of the party is in this thing called New Labour, a more corporatist sort of Democratic Party, you can see the natural tension, because the roots of the Labour Party are in the labour union movement. And, you know, they've walked away from their roots because they think they have to move very far to the centre, almost to the centre right, in order to win elections, because the Tories won such a convincing victory.
Has it emboldened some of the, say, your Warren wing? Has it emboldened that group?
I think in some respects it has. It's very much a grassroots group now. They're very, very interested in you know, how are we going to take the party forward? I think that's their idea, because they feel as though the party has lost its way, much in the same way that you know, your senator Cory Booker and others, you know, tend to be more to the left in the party.
Yes. Well, you're running for office.
I am.
What?
Well, actually, we call it standing here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me.
Yeah, you run, we stand.
You're standing for office. That seems better. somehow. Less exhausting and
less exhausting, but I have to be very careful with my terminology. Yeah, I've lived in Wales for 12 years, and I have a Dutch wife, and I have three teenage kids who have U.S. and Netherlands passports. And you know, we always thought about, well, what would we do if one of us were unable to walk on this planet anymore? We decided that it probably made sense for me to also become a citizen of the United Kingdom. And I've fallen in love with this place in the 12 years that I've been here. And
you were born in the U.S., is that correct?
I was born in the U.S.A., and you know, I've been in Europe, though, for 18 years. I spent 6 years
allowed
in the Netherlands and 12 years here.
You're allowed to stand for office even though you weren't born here.
Well, I became a citizen. I became, in essence, we don't call them citizens either. We call them subjects. So I'm a subject of Her Majesty, and I'm also, I have a dual national status. I have a U.S. passport as well.
Is there a patriot movement on the right there that attacks you or people like you who were not born in the U.K., much like the one we have here in the U.S.?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes. I mean, they're called the UKIP, the U.K. Independence Party. And, you know, like them or not, and I happen not to, they managed to garner almost 4 million votes in the last general election. But the problem is that they didn't do very well in any of the 650 districts that they ran in. They only have one seat in Parliament. So there's a strong call, as there has been from the smaller parties, including my own party, the Liberal Democrats, for a more proportional representation system. Right now, it's something called first past the post, very much like what you have in your individual congressional districts. He who gets the most votes wins the seat. Mm. Whereas it doesn't matter that, you know, throughout the course of the country, there were almost 2 million Green votes cast, 4 million UKIP votes cast, and none of those people got the kind of proportionality that the Scottish National Party did, winning all their seats up in Scotland. So it's a bit of a muddle at the moment, and much like what the Republicans have done, the Tories, which are our conservatives, they're our Republican Party, for lack of a better word, have gerrymandered the districts here as well, so that a lot of their seats are very, very safe, and there are very few swing states, where we call them marginal districts here. Mm. So. Mm.
You spent last Saturday with others in the Liberal Democratic Party, or the Lib Dems, as I heard you say, at the Refugees Welcome Rally. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, it was astounding. It really was. I mean, we had over 1,000 people there, which for Cardiff is a very good-sized crowd. I mean, Cardiff is a very, very small city. But enough people, I think, are outraged. I mean, I saw a graphic today that was put together by somebody, which basically says, you know, you've got Lebanon, which has taken in more than 1 million people. And it's the size of the tiniest of counties in the UK. They literally put Lebanon on the map down next to, you know, where Penzance and Land's End is, basically. Mm-hmm. And you could see the relative size of the two. And then there's the claim that, you know, Britain is full. We can't take in any refugees. Well, you know, Prime Minister Cameron has said that we will take in 20,000 over the course of the next parliament, which ends in 2020. So no matter how you slice it, that's 4,000 people over the course of 5 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas Angela Merkel in Germany says we're going to take 800,000 people. So,
you know, I'm not really familiar when there's a refugee crisis and countries say we will take XYZ. Is that take forever, or is that take until crisis abates? What are we talking about?
Well, I think what you see with most of these people is, you know, that yes, there's a certain amount of people that will probably stay here forever, but people don't want to be here. You know, people from Syria, 11 million people have been displaced by the combination of war on so many different fronts. They've escaped. Many have gone to Jordan. Many have gone to Lebanon. Many have gone into Turkey. And once they get there, they're trying to figure out, okay, where to from here? Because some of the refugee camps and the situations, your Richard Engel at NBC had a huge story on, you know, the refugees trying to get across the Hungarian border out of Serbia, which was recently closed down. And it's just astonishing how difficult it is for people. Yes, there are a couple of people that have also come in and tried to take advantage of the chaos of the situation. But for the most part, what we see happening is that the right wing tends to conflate those that are the economic migrants, very much like, you know, what your Republican Party is doing with Mexicans and demonizing them and building walls and, you know, Donald Trump and, need I say more?
No.
There's some element of that here with UKIP and the far right wing of the conservatives are going to say, Britain is full, we can't take any more people, which is ridiculous. I mean, there's only about 5% of the landmass of this country that's actually inhabited. And if you look at where we are on the scale in terms of size of country and everything else, if you look at a proportional number compared to what Germany's doing, our number should be somewhere around about 550,000 people coming into the UK. And the need is there. There are 3 million people trying to work their way across the northern borders. Mm. Others are trying to stay in the region. But everybody wants to go home when it's safe to so do. Mm. And right now, ISIS and ISIL are, depending on, you know, what you call them, you've got Iran as an instigator. You've got such instability throughout the entire region, not to mention the fact that the president of Syria, Assad, has killed 300,000 of his own people. Mm-hmm. And there are now 1,100 people out there that you would consider to be refugees that are literally fleeing for their lives.
Oh, a destabilized Middle East. How could that have started? What? I can't imagine. You know, I want to shift just a bit from that, because here's a question, and it may seem silly, but just speaking with you reminds me of a certain British politeness that I have come across. And I'm wondering, you know, in the U.S., we have a lot of hate talk radio where the way people, and hate talk TV, Fox, where the way people address each other and talk to each other has devolved to the worst of, a bad family holiday gathering where everyone hates each other. You know, people are talking to each other with no sense of decorum and no respect for the other person as a human being. Is that happening in the UK as well?
Not to the degree that the Trump-inspired mania, you know, has created there.
I think it was pre-Trump. I mean, Trump is a horrible
example. This is
probably
the seventh or eighth show I've done just this week alone for people in the U.S. asking that exact same question.
Really?
What do people think of what's going on in the United States right now with the political discourse? And I have to tell you that, you know, not just there, but here, it's partly why I'm standing, because I'm sick and tired of everybody retreating to their talking points and throwing spitballs or worse at each other, because nothing is getting done. I mean, I grew up in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and, you know, my senators back then were Ted Kennedy, the liberal lion, and the first African-American moderate Republican senator, Ed Brooke. Okay? Now, these two guys were ideologically opposed, but they knew they had to come together to get stuff done. Mm. And that's kind of my message here, is that I literally sit sometimes on television sets, you know, where they have a Tory and they have a Labour member going at each other left and right, and I'm sort of the journalist offering, you know, the standard fare. And I can remember 2 years ago watching one of these food fights and just being so totally disgusted. Adrian, the host, looked at me and said, Dennis, you know, you're the objective one here. What do you think of all this? I said, this is why people hate politics and politicians. Mm. And we've forgotten how to disagree without becoming personally disagreeable.
Well, you know, we actually, with Bernie Sanders, and I played a clip of him last week, they are constantly trying to bait him on different media shows to attack Hillary Clinton, and he's refused to do it. And I think that's very commendable, whereas most of the, or a good chunk of the 3 hour plus debate from last night was Donald Trump personally insulting the other candidates and, you know, the other candidates personally insulting Donald Trump. It's just,
it was terrible.
It's a horror show.
I mean, we talked about that on the podcast today, and I was the one that had to basically go through the 5 hours of tape. I didn't go through the whole 5 hours. I mean, I grabbed the highlights because one of the funniest lines I saw was from, you know, the Guardian correspondent
who, you know, at the end of the 5 hours has said, you know, I don't know where my family is. I just know I value them, but this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever been through. and that's the way most people here feel. They cannot believe that that clown car of 11 people are running for the highest office in the United States using blatant lies and blatant BS. It's just absolutely beyond the scope of imagination. And frankly, we're very concerned here because in the general election, a lot of that Frank Luntz style of total deception made its way into our campaign here. Mm. Every one of the Tories in every one of the 650 districts repeated the same 7 words like a meditative mantra. The SNP, which is Scottish National Party, backed Labour Party, is dangerous for Britain. Oh. And they said it over and over and over again. And suddenly, well, Mrs. Jones, 84 years old, who's voted Labour her entire life, says, well, wait a minute, I'm going to tell you, I'm hearing that, you know, Labour's SNP back now, and that would be dangerous for Britain. I can't vote for them. Mm. And that's how they win elections.
Yes,
they
fear.
They win by lying and cheating.
Oh, yes. And there were some blatant lies about Planned Parenthood in the. I can't believe no one called them on those lies.
And nobody calls them on it. And their base just...
Isn't that what the news guy is supposed to do? Is to say, well, actually, we fact-check, and what you're saying is completely false.
You know, I start every morning here the same way. About 7 o'clock in the morning, it actually downloads close to 5 on my iPad. I listen to the audio portion of Maddow on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the only sliver of sanity left over at MSNBC. I don't recognize that channel anymore. It's just, it's become this corporate monolith that has just destroyed any chance of there being any sort of progressive media in the USA. I'm talking to lots of radio people now, like yourselves, who seem to be carrying the banner, and God love you, we need more people like you out there with it.
Thank you. We need people to pay us to do it. That would be great also. Yeah. That's the problem because, you know, MSNBC is a corporate structure and then they function underneath a corporate structure. Dennis, we have run up against the very end of our show. I can't believe.
Oh.
I know. So sad. You have to join us again and much sooner this time. You can follow Dennis's campaign on Facebook at Dennis.Campbell, DennisCampbell. And Twitter at UK Progressive. The magazine is ukprogressive.co.uk. And the Three Muckrakers podcast is a must-have on iTunes and Podcast Nation if you've got an Android. You can pretty much find it anywhere. His book, Egypt Unshackled, using social media to blank up the system, is still the only book out there that basically deals with the 18 days of revolution, capturing the tweets and posts of those on the ground and around the scene. It is available on Amazon and Kindle. Thank you so much, Dennis, and we will be following your campaign. All right. You're listening to The Giuliana Forlano Show. We didn't have very much time to take your calls today. Isn't that sad? I hate that. We didn't even have time to do our absolute favorite segment, Feel the Burn. But I do want to say that guess who's coming to town? Yeah, the Pope. But also, Bernie Sanders is coming to town, and he will be here tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, Friday. Charles, what time is he coming? Do you know?
It's going to be 12:30 p.m.
Oh, he's coming in the lunchtime hour.
Yeah.
Oh, 12:30 p.m. He's going to be at Town Hall. It is a fundraiser, but there are affordable rates in which you can get in. If you want to find out about that, I have posted the link to it on GiulianaForlano.com. Go there. Visit us at GiulianaForlano.com. I might be there at the Bernie event. Might be, might be. Might go to the press area and rub elbows with the corporate chills that who will be there to smear him. Sorry I couldn't get to all your calls. You can find us online at GiulianaForlano.com. We are on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Giuliana Forlano, and I encourage you to do that. We are on the For Your Information Nation Network. We are on Netroots Nation Radio. We are on the Progressive Voices Network at 11 a.m. on Saturday and again at 9 p.m. on Sunday. Where else can you find Giuliana Forlano? Well, I'm on Facebook. There's a lot of Giuliana Forlano available to you if you are into it. Otherwise, we will catch you right here, Same bat time, same bat channel next week.